out the true artists. So let's get it, yeah, let's see what we can uncover.
Cut the cards, it's shuffle time. You are listening to Don't Take It Personally, a deep dive into the inner recesses of the Japanese mind. I am one of your hosts, the beloved Mayor Howard Vander. And who do I have with me in the chair?
The slightly more reluctant Medium Hollow.
Yes, and you can find us being the greatest friendship the internet has ever produced over on Twitter. It's tacky to plug it right now. Now, longtime fans of this episode, which is dropping right now as the beginning one, will be able to tell you right away that you and I, when we work together, it's not to blow our own horn here, but it's Jagger and Richards. You know, it's Lennon and all the other ones. It's something interesting is produced. And I would say that ever since the beloved podcast, The Vander Jam, which we previously collaborated on and changed the industry forever, I think the public's been clamoring for more, and the obvious question was, what's next? And that brings us here.
All right, so if we're going to dive right in, I'd like to start by talking about the very first Persona game, Persona, if you aren't sure or aren't
Well, maybe
familiar.
We should explain what our show is first.
I think it's pretty clear, Howard. Our show is about Persona.
That's true. I mean, don't take it personally. I think the moment you hear it said aloud, you understand what this show is going to be. For the record, a deep dive into the various instances of Atlus Gaming's long-running and beloved Persona game series. We are going to be looking at each instance of the Persona series one by one. As we recently discovered, we are both men in our 30s who are fans of at least one of the Persona games.
I would say fan pretty loosely, honestly. I've played the first half of Persona 5, I think, 3 times. And
okay.
Then eventually I get bored and I set it down. But I'm a big fan of the aesthetic of the series.
Yes.
And it definitely made me more interested in at least talking about it a little bit with someone who I think knows more about it than me.
Yeah, I mean, I recently got on board with the Xbox Game Series Game Pass. That's the one. They recently ported over Persona 4 Golden, which I am currently 60 hours into, and from what I understand, about the halfway point. It's an interesting game because it's dungeon crawling mechanics with a visual novel type presentation and a heavy emphasis on life simulator. So, that's the only one I've ever played, but I would
just
say...
Just like to cut in really quick.
Yes.
And let the audience know if you're unfamiliar with what a visual novel is. It is a video game for people who cannot play video games.
Or for people who can't read.
I don't think most people who can't read are using a computer.
But they may be using a Game Boy, and they may live in Japan. Those things are all the rage. I think it's important to note, though, in many senses, whereas Final Fantasy, I think there's something universal about themes. Persona is a very Japanese franchise.
I would agree with that. I think the school life aspect of it is kind of a unique storytelling medium in Japan than
yeah.
It is in the West.
Well, because it's rooted in everyday Japanese life as a young person, right? As opposed to Final Fantasy, where it's like, okay, now you're a party of beloved people having an opera house scene in fantasy world.
Or, yeah, a lovable scamp of a rogue with a tale that is never really explained and never questioned throughout the entire game. I think that that's a universal experience.
Yep. Or having a bear man that becomes real man, but also is bear man. It's going to go somewhere. I don't know where. I haven't beaten the game yet. All that to say, though, is it's an interesting series because it's very stylish. It does interesting things with the classic RPG formula. It has an excellent soundtrack, and it has deep psychological themes, you know, particularly Jungian archetypes, and they manifest in interesting ways. So, you and I thought it would be prudent if we took a deep dive into the Persona series, where they come from, where they go, and, you know, the Redneck song. So that, I guess, takes us to the very first instance of the Persona series, a little game that comes out in 1996 called Revelations: Persona. Now, it's important to note that this game came out 17 days after Howard turned 10. I think there's significance in that.
What significance would you say is in that?
I don't know yet, but I feel like that can't not mean something. It's like how my birthday was also Greg Maddux's MLB pitching debut.
Well, that clearly has a significant relevance because you've been hitting home runs on Twitter for the last 3 years.
That's true. In many respects, I am in the jaded, cynical, burnout, mid-30s, ironic, socialist section of Twitter. I am in their Hall of Fame as far as podcasts go. You're with me too, buddy.
Saying the quiet parts out loud.
Exactly. It's know who you are. And in fact, the Persona games very much are about confronting your inner self and learning to accept the negative emotions as necessary parts of you rather than elements to reject.
You could even go so far as to say that I am thou and thou art I.
Aw, the anchor line. That's the anchor line, listener. But yeah, so our story begins with Persona Revelations. Revelations Persona, that's the one. Now, Hollow, I understand you did a deep dive on this one independently.
Well, so I knew nothing about Revelations Persona before. Okay. About 4 hours ago.
It's not very popular in the West.
It definitely seems that way, but I think it should be. Now, let me preface this by saying I don't really remember everything that was in the video that I watched. It was about an hour long, and my attention span doesn't reach that point. But
that's a solid amount of video about video, you know?
Right. Especially a video that I do not care about. So, all that to say, as far as I can tell, the very first Persona game, once again, Revelations: Persona.
Yeah.
The first.
If it's an old website and you don't put the colon in, it'll be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
It will show you something else.
Yeah. So, remember the colon.
Always remember the colon.
Yes.
Now, that being said, it starts out with several high schoolers.
Okay.
And
I'm on board.
The plot seems to go in a couple weird ways. From what I can tell, these high schoolers all have a dream about a guy in an opera mask who tells them that they have JoJo's Bizarre Adventure stands inside them, like magical ghosts that are a manifestation of each of their individual personalities.
Okay, sort of like if you threw up and then it grew bigger than you and could also fight.
Yeah, something very similar to that.
Okay.
And I think maybe they're demons? I can't tell for sure. So, from there, the gang, who I remember none of their names, there's quite a few of them. It really seems like everyone in this game has a persona. My experience with playing
staff of Persona, we live in 5, a society, so it makes sense.
I just more expected there to only be like 5 or 6 based on my experience with the most tall
one,
Persona
the
game.
Fat one, yeah.
Right, the Green Ranger. Yeah.
Exactly. So, the Green Ranger. Is the Green Ranger in the first Persona game?
No, not as such, but there is a sort of sixth Power Ranger type character who shows up when they enter the alternate universe that was made by a character called the Snow Queen, who I think is not the antagonist. I think this is just a, like, 40-hour-long side quest that you do not have to do. It's, like, not part of the main plot at all.
Okay, like Final Fantasy VIII?
Yeah, pretty much exactly like the Laguna arc of Final Fantasy VIII.
Okay. And also the fact that you spend, like, 2/3 of the game trying to fight one enemy and then another third being like, nope, this is the actual villain.
Yeah. Ultimecia was a hell of a surprise.
Yeah. And I mean, Final Fantasy VIII has definitely grown on me over time. I think it's way too mechanically twiddly. I think it requires way too much micromanagement. And, like, there's a difference between mechanics, like the importance of not grinding in that game, and sort of not leveling up. The game is famously easier if you don't. I think that coming on the heels of 7, which was a breakthrough for, like, acclaim and accessibility, and in terms of sales, I think it was the wrong game to follow 7 up with. But as I get older, like, I like playing 8, and I appreciate what it is a lot more.
See, in my problem with 8 is that I find the junction system to be a complete chore, which is, like a minority opinion. From a lot of people that I've talked to who truly love Final Fantasy 8, it's because of the junction system.
See, but that's very surprising. Most of the 8 fans I meet are more fans of the story, specifically Squall and Rinoa. Whereas pretty much everyone I talk to is like, yeah, junction system, you can do cool things with it. It's neat to have that level of control, but there is so much micromanaging to the point where it just ruptures the flow of the narrative.
I also think that a lot of the secondary cast in Final Fantasy VIII is weaker than the secondary characters in a lot of the other Final Fantasy games.
Compare, though. Because, I mean, Zell is a positive character. Gets a lot of screen time. Like, who's the guy from FF10, John DiMaggio, doing the island voice? The Blitzball guy.
Waka,
yes. Oh, man, I really shouldn't do the voice, so I'm not going to. But
Don't do the voice.
A lot of people love Ted, sincerely. And, I mean, I see why it is not personally my favorite, only because I played it when I was, like, 35. So you form a different emotional bond to it, I think. That being said, like, I don't think Zell, for instance, is any weaker. Quistis is a surprisingly nuanced character.
I'll give you that.
You know, and Irvine, I mean, he's pretty cool, even though, it's just the standard, I act tough, but I'm not arc.
I mean, he's really just a reskin of Barrett.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Except he doesn't have the interesting bit about Marlene, right? He doesn't get that wrinkle. I think if there's one failing of 8, though, is with the reveal that they all knew each other as kids. At that point, it kind of flattens everyone's growth in ways that, like, 7 doesn't. Because from then on, it's just, well, everybody's actually a function of Squall's story. And in the end, that's kind of all they're ever allowed to be.
Because part of the draw, I think, is that for a long time, Squall doesn't feel like the main character of the world.
Yeah, and in a sense, he actively seems to refuse that, which is like, why are you part of Seed in the first place? Like, it aims to be, I think, more along the lines of, say, a Vagrant story type tone and a Vagrant story type narrative with this weird, like, future tech sensibility. I love its aesthetic. There are sections where it is an absolute nightmare to play, I'll admit.
I like that you brought up Vagrant Story, though, because that is a game I have never played, but I've read about and watched a friend of mine play a little bit of.
It is a game very much built for Let's Plays.
And I think the really cool thing about Vagrant Story is that it actually is canonically tied to one of the Final Fantasy worlds or settings. Ivalice, I don't know, is the setting in Final Fantasy Tactics, Final Fantasy XII, and also Vagrant Story, which I think is really cool.
So, yeah, like, it's one of those things where I don't think it necessarily adds to it. Vagrant Story is, like, setting tied rather than character, if I'm not mistaken.
And it 100% feels like a side story if you view it that way. Ultimately inconsequential to the things that go on in this kind of world.
Well, but it's also a story that is important unto itself and kind of by the end sort of explains why no one in the universe would have heard this tale.
Yeah, and there's just something, I don't know, really appealing about that to me. Just sort of an inconsequential but really interesting sort of spin on a story that nobody else might pay attention to. Which I think happened by and large, because it didn't sell very well, right?
I'm trying to think. Like, okay, so 6 was obviously huge. 7 was, yeah. Vagrant Story, I believe, underperformed what, like, FF7 would have done. Most Square games would. I'm pretty sure it was kind of like that Criterion tier of game where it's like it does not sell, but everyone who buys it adores it and understands what it is.
Just like Brave Fencer Musashi.
Oh man, that was the first game I remember reading about in like Electronic Gaming Monthly when the PlayStation was out. They had a guide on how to beat and play through Brave Fencer Musashi. Because kids, before the internet was the thing, you would buy video game magazines, and some of them you would buy specifically because they're like, this month we have a walkthrough on Brave Fencer Musashi.
There was a lot of cool stuff like that. It's wild to me that we used to have like entire sections in the electronics section of stores that were just dedicated to guidebooks for individual games.
Yeah, and like if you ever go to like a used game store, and that like there's a few in my neighborhood where you look on if they have a shelf, take a look, because they probably have a ton of old Prima strategy guides. And one of the, I think it's Final Fantasy X, famously has an absolutely atrocious strategy guide where it costs like $30 and most of the things are, if you want to figure this out, go to this web link.
I remember the first strategy guide I ever bought was actually for Pokemon Gen 3, Ruby and Sapphire, when those came out in, I think, 2003, 2004.
Okay. Now, not to cut you off, though, Pokemon, though, I think is getting a little far afield from the task at hand. Final Fantasy VIII. So, I think it's interesting, though. Like, I admire that they wanted to do something so different from FF7. Because when you think about it, 7 is pretty radically different from 6.
Oh, I guess 100%.
Like, the setting... way. Yeah, like, the difference between... the difference between 7 and 8, though, feels bigger. I feel like that's bigger, actually, than between 6 and 7. Or 4 and 6, you know? There's definitely Final Fantasy games that skew towards the more fantastical part. And then there's definitely the ones that are more on, like, the harder side. Like, FF12 is apparently Game of Thrones.
See, from what I understand, FF12 is the plot of Star Wars.
Okay. Now, Star Wars, that's a film.
A series of films, actually. There's 9 Star Wars films.
9 films?
Officially numbered, of course. There's several other ones that some people argue are better, like Rogue One. Those people are wrong.
Okay.
Rogue One was a fine movie, but it's not a Star Wars movie, and I think that's an important distinction that needs to be made.
So there's a sense of what a Star Wars movie is?
Absolutely, 100%. Okay. If it doesn't deeply shake the foundations of your belief that you are a Star Wars fan, then it is not a Star Wars movie, and Rogue One just doesn't do that. It's an overall pleasant ride from top to bottom. It's a great action espionage movie, but it's not a Star Wars movie, because it doesn't make me for a brief moment feel truly bad about myself for enjoying this franchise.
Would you describe it as a movie that runs at high speed and is full of rapid maneuvers?
100%. Absolutely. Okay.
I think that's fair. I think we often forget that a lot of cinema doesn't aspire to be at the level of high art. And I think a movie like Rogue One, if you can pay your money and be like, yeah, that was a good night out. I mean, I think that's what most directors realistically are aiming for, rather than being put in the Criterion.
Yeah, because there's a lot of weight that comes from being a Star Wars movie, or at least there definitely was in the beginning, and even in the early days of Disney taking over the Star Wars franchise. But I do think that they are spreading the content a little thin, and it's starting to make people sick of Star Wars, just like they had been with Disney's other large acquisition, which was Marvel, and the movies that they churned out, which also have, by and large, I think, fallen out of public favor in the last half decade or so.
Well, you say that, and yet Angela Bassett was nominated for an acting Oscar for Wakanda Forever. So it's this weird ebb and flow. I think there's a greater sense of cynicism due to them flooding their own market. Because I remember the initial run up to Avengers, and people were excited, and it paid off. And then we just got too much. In some ironic ways, though, especially with the fact that there was a recently announced mobile game coming out set in the universe, that's a criticism people have levied at the Persona games as well. And more importantly, it's a criticism people have levied for the last 30 years about the Final Fantasy games. And I mean, that's not even getting into like Tactics, which became like a sort of dedicated series within itself, right?
I think that it's 35 years this year, actually.
35 years.
The first Final Fantasy game came out.
Wow. And Chrono Trigger recently celebrated 28. Did you ever play that one?
See, I have a complicated relationship with Chrono Trigger because I never played it.
Okay.
I know what happens throughout the entire game because I'm a person who plays video games and I'm a person who grew up playing RPGs. So there's no way that you don't know what happens in Chrono Trigger.
Of course.
I understand why it is considered one of the greatest RPGs of all time. And I think if I actually sat down and played it, I would probably agree. But because I don't have a horse in the race in regards to Chrono Trigger,
metaphorically, of course.
One of my favorite things to do in any gaming conversation is to gaslight people into thinking or into believing that I think Chrono Trigger is mid or at least largely overrated.
Okay. You like being a contrarian.
Not in every circumstance, but in this one. For some reason, I think it's funny every time to rile people up. I also do the same thing with Kendrick Lamar.
Okay, so Chrono Kendrick contrarianism. Do you think there's something there?
I think that probably boils down my entire personality.
Yeah, I think that explains something. I'm not sure what's unlocked, but I think that's very telling, if that makes sense.
It feels right.
Yeah, like the same way that Persona came out 17 days after I turned 10, which is crazy. It's like, have you ever seen Denny Villeneuve's Enemy?
No, I have not.
Okay, so it...
I do know right, how to spell came his out, last name.
Yes, it's easy if you... are familiar with the concept of names and that you can spell them how they are spelled. You remember the movie Prisoners with Gyllenhaal and Wolverine?
No.
Okay. And Paul Dano was in it and Terrence Howard was in it. Melissa Leo was in it.
I was actually just thinking about Paul Dano earlier today.
Yeah. Good thoughts or
I want to revisit Little Miss Sunshine because I haven't seen that movie in probably 10, 15 years. And
it's been about 5 for me, but I have liked that movie every time I've seen it. I don't remember if I like it the same, but
see, I'm mostly just curious if Paul Dano's breakdown is as impressive as I remember it being when I watched it the first time.
See, I never found it all that impressive.
But you also watched it 5 years ago, too, which is a much easier way to not be impressed.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, like every time... Back to Chrono Trigger, though, I think every time I sit down and play through that one again, I understand all over again why, if not necessarily the best game of all time, a special game.
How many endings have you completed?
How many are there? It's either 16 or 32.
It's a lot.
Yeah, I believe I probably would have done like a dozen of them. I have unlocked the golden ending, not to brag or anything. But yeah, like it's also a game where like the main ending feels right. And I think as long as a game delivers on that, you know, it's going to be beloved by a certain section of people. Chrono Trigger, though, is, it's a smaller universe, but it's a higher quality. Because Final Fantasy games, I don't think anyone's arguing that they're all masterpieces or the same tier of masterpiece.
I think there are definitely people arguing that.
What do you see these people being like?
Well, I'm just sure that they're out there. I'm sure that there are diehard Final Fantasy stans who are happy Stantasy. With anything that they give.
Did you ever see Advent Children?
Yes.
Okay, what did you think of Advent Children?
I would pivot that to ask you how similar you think Advent Children is to another movie with children in the name, Children of Men.
Okay. I saw Advent Children on a torrented copy in like 2005, maybe.
Yeah,
the year that it came out. Yeah, whatever. The year that it came out and was finally torrentable in North America. All I really remember is that Rufus is alive and not actually hurt. I like Rufus. He's a character. I love certain rogues, you know. I love the Turks as well. They're delightful.
I watched Advent Children in the choir room of my high school right after it came out on a torrented copy that was not translated, did not have subtitles. I had no idea what was going on the entire time because I hadn't actually played Final Fantasy VII at that time.
That would have been amazing.
I had absolutely no idea what was going on, but the scene where Cloud flew up into the sky and destroyed, I think, Bahamut?
Yeah, where he's like swapping the materia out of his sword as he's fighting.
Right. I just remember thinking like, okay, that's badass, but I wonder what's going on and who this guy is.
Yeah, and that's kind of the funny thing about consuming international media, because recently I tried to watch the film Godzilla, or Shin Godzilla, directed by Hideaki Anno, who famously made the Evangelion series, His and Her Circumstances, Known Eccentric. Apparently, some people have theorized that he was part of the cult that released sarin gas in the Tokyo subway system. I had heard that. I can't find any details on it, so please don't litigate. All that to say, though, is his Godzilla movie I was watching, and I did not have subtitles for it. And yet I could pick up a lot of the political commentary there simply because of the way that bureaucracy and sort of management culture in the face of a crisis, the way that it's aestheticized on film alone made me pick up, okay, we're also satirizing something at play here as well. And I don't think every filmmaker is capable of doing that, nor is every work capable. If you don't know anything about Final Fantasy VII and you're being hit with Advent Children, that's a lot to take in, and I'm proud of you for rolling with it.
Well, you see, what I did was lie to my friends and say that I had played Final Fantasy VII because I wanted to be a part of the group in that instance.
So you wouldn't have been part of the group had you not have played Final Fantasy VII?
See, that's what's hilarious. It absolutely would have changed nothing, but I was a deeply mentally ill teenager, as yet undiagnosed.
You know, another series, or another installation of a game about mentally ill teenagers and their inner demons?
What might that be?
Final Fantasy VIII.
You keep bringing us back to Final Fantasy VIII, but I think what you're forgetting is the sleeper best Final Fantasy game in the series is 9. You actually have avoided bringing up 9 this entire conversation, and I think that's a massive oversight on your part, because I think 9 brings us back to, and I know that this is often said by people who like Final Fantasy IX, but I prefer the way that it brings us back away from the more technologically advanced 7 and 8 into what feels to me like a traditional Final Fantasy world.
Yeah, it's the last classic Final Fantasy, I think, visually anyway. In terms of like the world.
I disagree right away. I think the last classic Final Fantasy is 6.
No, 6 is very steampunk in a lot of respects. It's a very dark and grit. It's like, okay, take 4 as sort of like the baseline Final Fantasy world up until 6. So 6 makes it grittier, makes the villains scarier. 7 makes it cyberpunk and world world is at stake from nature's response. 8 becomes even more sci-fi, I think, in its aesthetics, and the models become like tall people instead of weird blobby sprites. 9 very much is a callback to like number 4 through 6. And that's what I mean by like classic.
Okay, yeah, I follow you now.
Because after that you get 10, which is not to say that it's a
departure.
It's not a dark game, but it's fully voiced. It's presenting a different style to accommodate for 3D gameplay and the simulation of choice and that. Like, it's that's the moment Final Fantasy games adapt to being within a new console and gaming generation. I think
10 was amazing when it came out.
10 manages, I think, overall to be on the lighter side of things, all things considered. I would say like 8 is a darker game than 10. And 9 is a lighter game than 7 from what I played so far. But I got like 15 hours in and forgot what I was doing, and now I don't remember what to do.
I don't know about that. I hate to give any spoilers for something that we haven't played before. I have, obviously, but I'm using the royal we to mean you. I think that's okay. Second person perspective, but I'm not certain. Either way, when you get into the deeper parts of Final Fantasy IX, and, well, I suppose Final Fantasy as a series actually loves doing this, but you really get into the concept of the horrors of genocide.
Yeah.
And
it is horrific.
And what it means to be alive versus a puppet.
Yeah. I mean, 10 definitely does some interesting thematic things that you wouldn't see coming. And it sounds like maybe on similar lines that emerges in 9. Like, because I think, though, at its core, though, a lot of the Final Fantasy games, even going back to 4, are ultimately the nature of oneself and whether or not you're going, like, Cecil, is he a paladin or is he the Dark Knight? Is he following orders or is he doing what's right? You know, Terra, is she a human? Is she an Esper? If she's either of them, is she good or is she evil? Cloud, is he a soldier? Is he a person? Is he a hero?
Dangerous schizophrenic.
Exactly. I think they kind of resolved that a little too neatly when he's just like, sorry, everyone, I kind of wigged out for a couple of months. And they're like, you spiky-headed weirdo. Ain't no getting off of this train.
Right, there ain't any ride at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, like, you love Barrett because they're... He seems to get over things so quickly, but that's really the ethos of ain't no getting off of this train we're on. And sometimes it really can be as simple as that. But the whole idea is that the Final Fantasy games are about the main characters negotiating who they are amidst binary choices of good and evil.
I think that that's definitely true, especially in 9. When you find out that the main character is Zidane, the reason he has a tail is because he is actually an artificial life form that was specifically created to destroy Earth. So I guess in that way, the plot of Final Fantasy IX is actually the plot of Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I don't know anything about the Monkey King legend, and like that classic story cycle.
I actually know a decent amount about that. I got really interested in the great novels of Chinese history, and Journey to the West is one of those. And I actually bought the translation of the entire Journey to the West story, which is like 10 volumes. It's insane. But the problem is, when it showed up, I was not able to read it because I thought I had ordered a translated volume, but the one I got was actually in Chinese, so it is sitting on my shelf.
That is actually pretty incredible. That's a wonderful decor piece.
Yeah, no one's asked me about it yet, but I'm waiting.
Like, I think if I was on a date with you and we got to the point where, like, I had come to your place and I saw that on the shelf, I'd be like, wow, this Hollow guy, not only is he handsome, but he's clearly well-read. He's got all 10 volumes of Journey to the West right there.
Well, see, this and hypothetical in Chinese. Is not even hypothetical because you would never go on a date with me.
I beg to differ. You know a lot about RPGs, and I like RPGs, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, right? Because, and that's going back to the idea of, like, Japanese-ness. Final Fantasy kind of tones it down, but there are certainly moments in every game where it kind of comes out, like, you know, the scene where Cloud has to cross-dress. That's definitely one of them. You know, where it just hits this weird, like, just sort of bizarrely crass humor out of nowhere as, like, a total, like, mood shift.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a nice coming up for air sometimes.
Yeah, and then other times it's just like, wow, they're sure playing out this this lengthy
really
sequence.
Really uncomfortable joke.
Yeah, it's Persona 4 actually has a lot of moments like that. But at the same time, I think there's definitely a way to overthink maybe the burden of treatment of certain themes and that in like classic RPGs, because it's like, again, remembering that these are commercial works. Yes, everything could be more responsible, but, like, I don't think there's ever anything pointed or anything necessarily disparaging. It's just there are weird things, and it feels like once you just see enough anime or things, it's like, you know, fan service moments and stuff like that, you're just like, yep, well, that's just a thing that happens. You're not surprised by it. You don't necessarily pop for it, but it's like, yep. That's a scene we're sitting through, and there's a difference, though, between, like, in anime, where it's usually very brief, whereas in, like, the Final Fantasy games, where it's, like, a 5-minute interactive sequence.
And I think that brings us back to visual novels, which I think puts us at a good point to end for the day. Howard, do you want to let our listeners know what we have coming up for them in the next episode?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I fully agree. Let's put a pin in that for now and pick it up next episode where we are going to continue our deep dive. We are going to be taking an in-depth look at the follow-up to Revelations:Persona. I am trying to figure out and specify the actual year that this one comes out. We are going to be looking at 1999's Persona 2 Innocent Sin. Now, there is a colon after the two. Depending on your browser, it may make all the difference. You know what else makes the difference? Spelling our names correctly, much like Denis Villeneuve, when we are being looked up by you on Twitter. Where can people find you, Hollow?
I would be found at Medium Hollow. It's one word with a second M after Medium. I'm adding an M every time I get an account banned from Twitter for yelling at Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, it's like Pat Benatar. She puts a notch in the lipstick case. I think this is a good analog for you. You can find me, as always, at Vander_IAM. And you can also contact us by emailing the show at personallypod@gmail.com. It's spelled the same as personally pod, but it's not said that way. So yeah, let us know your feedback. Let us know your thoughts on the Persona series. And we will pick it up next time. Did we talk about an exit line?
No, we did not.
Okay. Oh, duh. Until next time, don't take it personally.